Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, of the making of books, there is no end. How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. Well, last time we began our panel discussions of book one, and today we want to get right back into that. And I just wanted to maybe make just a few comments as we go into this discussion. Remember that in the book Utopia, there is a Thomas More that is narrating the book, and remember that that is not Sir Thomas More who wrote the book. And essentially, he developed another character, Thomas More, to keep himself out of trouble because he really did slap the political elite in England at that time, especially Henry VIII. So if I mention the word Morris, in some books, it's left as Thomas Morris, but that would be the Latin. And I think in the Dover Thrift edition, it's More, and some other editions, it's More. So I don't want to confuse anybody by that. And then also, I just wanted to mention that Raphael is one of the main characters here in this book one. And he is a fictional character, and his name actually means a talker of nonsense. I mean, that's essentially what his name means. And again, I think that was a way for More to say this is really a fictional work, and these people are not really real people that are talking about these really, I think, very critical comments about government. And so it's a way to protect himself as well. But basically, they want Raphael because he's so wise. He's been traveling around the world studying governments. He's also been to the island called Utopia, which is discussed in book two. And so they're trying to encourage Raphael to become a servant to a king because they would help kings rule better. Well, Raphael has four reasons, basically, why he doesn't want to be a servant to the king. And that's basically what book one is all about. And Raphael, he brings it, the first thing he brings up, he feels it'd be really futile to be a servant. And what he brings up is, the laws that they have for executing thieves. And essentially, he's talking about England, and they would hang thieves. I mean, if they stole $5 or £5, they were hung. And so he sees that as very wrong. Second is example, he talks about this imaginary court of France, where that's all that the king wants to do is go to war. Third example is he's also talking about an imaginary king that all he wants to do is accumulate wealth and money, and it's always a burden on the people. And then, of course, his fourth reason is he knows of a better place, and it's called the Island of Utopia. So we're going to get back into these examples today. So let's start now with these laws on thievery. So I'll just throw it open. What do you think of all of the discussion? I mean, it goes on and on for pages about all this discussion on how to deal with thieves. Go ahead, Deborah. We'll let you.
Well, it just that he talks about on one side, Raphael says that the people are thieves because they don't have any money. They don't have anything, and they don't have anything. So why? So the fact that the punishment of losing their life doesn't matter because they don't have anything anyway, and so it's not a deterrent. Whereas then the opposite argument is that, well, if you don't have some kind of deterrent like that, then everyone's just going to be a thief, So there was that discussion going back and forth. But it brings up the whole idea. There's a lot of the theme of the talking about the poor, and so that kind of that leads into more discussion about the poor and why they're poor.
Yeah, I thought there was really, one really good comment about. He also talks about what makes people thieves. And he talks about soldiers.
Right.
and he says that, you know, you send a soldier off to war, and I'm sure war at that time, well, we've seen enough on movies and things, it was absolutely horrible. He says, what do you expect? You send these soldiers off to war, and they're gallant, and they get their arms cut off, and they get their legs cut off, and they come back and they can't work. Well, what do you expect? You don't pay them anything, so they're going to rob. They're going to steal. And he says, you know, a gallant soldier can become a brave robber, you know, which is...
That was a
really good line in
yes,
the book.
Yes, right.
And so, so I mean, even today, we still struggle with this. It's they just have been showing this movie on the Vietnam War and how, you know, the Vietnam War was really hard on those soldiers, and they've come back and they've, you know, they've had PTSD and they've had all these problems, and are we taking care of them? And he even says that a better way to handle soldiers is to, you know, provide for them when they come back, you know, but then that has its problems too, and he talks about that if you give them too much, they're going to build an army and overthrow the king anyway. So, so go ahead,
Jerry. One other point, too, that he seems to bring out is, you know, rather than punishing, a society should be about rehabilitating. Mm-hmm. And so you have, you know, and the whole discussion about this thievery came up by the issue is, well, if you're killing all your thieves, why aren't all the people in the country dead? You know, because it seems like everyone's a thief. Mm-hmm. And then they explain the fact that the discussion goes, well, thievery is caused because of the parameters of society, which force people to be poverty stricken, and therefore, when you're poverty stricken, what choice do you have? You have to beg or be a thief, one or the other. And so then, if you're going to be killed, if you're a thief, well, what does it matter anyway? You know, because you have no choice of coming out of your of your beggar status.
Right.
So it's like, well, what is society supposed to do now? That's the argument. What is society supposed to do to make it so that these people who are thieves will no longer be thieves? Mm-hmm. And one argument is severe punishment, which kills them all off, but it doesn't teach anything to anyone. Or the other is there a way in which these people can be rehabilitated so they can be useful to society? And, of course, the underlying argument of all of this is that the reason that the society is unjust and that there is this poverty is because the king has taken all the land, and then basically everything is for the king, you know.
Right, which is really typical of England. I mean, if you go to England today, there's green areas that you can't even build on. That's why they have all these tiny apartments and all that, because you can't buy any land to build on anything. But back to the thievery thing, I think it was interesting. In one of the discussions, they were saying is that Raphael was saying, look, even your laws of punishment aren't working, because you would think that would deter them. You think, you know, killing them would deter them, and it doesn't, because they're still hungry.
That's right.
So, like my wife was saying, well, if you're still hungry, you're going to die anyway, right. You know, so why not go steal? But then you've noticed that Thomas More, the character Thomas More, or I'll just call him Thomas Morris, he comes back and he says that, if I can get this right, he's talking about that murder is different. What he says is that it's still a good punishment. You know, you still have to have this great, you know, if you've got to stop it somehow. But then Raphael says it doesn't stop. And so then he goes into the discussion about, you know, like murder, it makes sense to execute someone for murder, you know, because that's a big crime. But then the retort was, well, you know, the thing is, if they're stealing, they're not murdering. So this is what Raphael's saying, is that they're stealing, they're murdering. It doesn't deserve the same kind of punishment. And then he said, but if you punish for stealing and you punish for murder and it's the same punishment, well, then they're just going to murder the person they're stealing from.
Right. You're forcing people to murder.
Yes.
Yeah,
murder too.
Which is a good point.
Yes.
You know, it's like, well, they're going to rob you. They'll kill you and take everything.
Yeah. Yeah. So if I'm going to get killed anyway, I might as well murder the person,
right.
And then there's a good chance I'll get away. So maybe I slayed that too much, but it's it's really a good point, and it certainly made me think, right. You know, about what if I really were, you know, in charge of a whole country? How would I? Right. How would you deal with those kind of things? So, I mean, I still believe that, you know, I don't believe that stealing is that you necessarily have to have your head chopped off because you're stealing. But I know even in, you know, Charles Dickens with Tale of Two Cities, you know, they would do that to people. You know, there's that one whole horrible scene in that book where this young seamstress didn't do something right, and so they cut her head off. You know, it wasn't a serious thing at all, but that's the way it ends up in our societies. So, but anyway, I don't think they ever really resolve the whole issue with thievery, do they?
not really. I think any time there is a possible solution given, the response is, well, it wouldn't work here.
Yeah, kind of right. Thing, so. I think that was hilarious. I think that is. But, you know, there are some people that believe that. Well, we're going to do it this way because we've always done it this way. And we've always executed people for this, you know, so anyway.
But isn't that kind of the point of this discussion, though, the Socratic discussion, is you see both sides, but you don't really come to conclusion, hearing both sides.
But they want you to come to a conclusion. I mean, he wants us to come to a conclusion. Yes. I wanted to think there's some other things that we want to talk about with this futility. In other words, Raphael says, look, how can you change that? There's these different views. In other words, when Moore was talking to him, he's saying, look, see, I have a different approach, but you're going to do what you want to do anyway. But I thought it was interesting when he talks about the polylarets and how they deal with thieves. And so he does give this whole different discussion on it. And it's really, I don't know what you think. If you remember this is on page 12 of the Drover Thrift Edition. But what this impresses me is it wasn't the best solution either. And maybe I can just find it. It says at the very bottom of page 12, he says, this is Raphael telling him, he says, but the method that I liked best was that which I observed in my travels in Persia among the polylarets, who are a considerable and well-governed people. They pay a yearly tribute to the king of Persia, but in all other respects they are a free nation and governed by their own laws. They lie far from the sea and are environed with hills, and being contented with the productions of their own country, which is very fruitful, they have little commerce with any other nation. And as they, according to the genius of their country, have no inclination to enlarge their borders, so their mountains and the pension they pay to the Persians secure them from all invasions. They have no wars among them. They live rather conveniently than with splendor, and may be rather called a happy nation than either eminent or famous, for I do not think they are known so much as by name to any but their next neighbors. Those that are found guilty of theft among them are bound to make restitution to the owner, and not, as it is in other places, to the prince, for they reckon that the prince has no more right to the stolen goods than the thief. But if that which was stolen is no more in being, then the goods of the thieves are estimated, and restitution being made out of them, the remainder is given to their wives and their children, and they themselves are condemned to serve the public works, but are neither imprisoned nor chained, unless there happens to be some extraordinary circumstance in their crimes. So if you look at that, I mean, when I first started to read that, I thought, well, you know, that makes sense. I mean, we were taught that as kids. If you steal something, you replace it. But then if you go on and if you look at what if they don't do that, I mean, it seems like it gets worse. And so I think Sir Thomas More is throwing some of this out there to get you to think. He says, if they don't make restitution, notice he goes on to say, this is the middle of page 13, he says, in some places they are set to no public work, but every private man has that occasion to hire workers, goes to the marketplaces, and hires them of the public a little lower than he would do a free man if they go lazy about their task. He may quicken them with whips. By this means, there is always some piece of work or other to be done by them, and beside their livelihood, they can earn somewhat still to the public. They all wear a peculiar habit of one certain color, and their hair is cropped a little above their ears, and a piece of one of their ears is cut off. So if you're, to me, that's pretty barbaric as well. So if you're a thief, you know, you can make restitution, but if you're caught as a thief and you don't make restitution, then they're going to nick your ear, make you wear a certain dress, and then you can go out and be hired and work it off, kind of thing. But
essentially, they call them a slave too.
They
become slaves.
Right. Yeah, so they're slaves.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think that's an interesting solution, but to me, that doesn't seem like the perfect way to go about it. When I think, you know, rehabilitation is definitely the better option there. So, okay. Any other comments on thievery? You know, so we can maybe move on to the next. But again, listeners, you're going to have to really read this for yourself. And it's a little bit of a struggle, but once you just, you know, once you read it, maybe you have to read a couple of things a few times. It really does get you to start thinking about how to solve these problems. And, you know, being in government is not easy. Okay, his second example, I think, is really interesting of why he does not want to serve with the king. And he talks, it starts on about page 17 in my little book, about this imaginary court of some French king, and they're always set on war. And so he really does have, you can tell that he's really against going to war all the time. And if you know anything about English society, the most favorite loved kings of the English were the warrior kings. and England was always out there working very hard to take back France. I mean, even all the way up to the American Revolution, they were still trying to take back France. And so obviously, I think, you know, Sir Thomas More is really not happy with English society and their warrior kings. And but this is at the bottom of page 17, or towards the middle of my page. And this is Raphael saying, "Do you not think that if I were about any king proposing good laws to him and endeavoring to root out all the cursed seeds of evil that I found in him, I should either be turned out of his court or at least be laughed at for my pains?" He said, "Look, if I go to court, if I go to attach myself as a servant to a king, they're not going to listen to me anyway. They're going to either kick me out or they're going to laugh at me." He said, "For instance, what could it signify if I were about the king of France and were called into his cabinet council where several wise men in his hearing were proposing many expeditions, as by what arts and practices Milan may be kept and Naples that had so oft slipped out of their hands, recovered how the Venetians, after that, the rest of Italy may be subdued, and how Flanders and Brabant and all Burgundy and some other kingdoms which he has swallowed already in his designs may be added to his empire. One proposes a league with the Venetians to be kept as long as he finds his account in it, and that he ought to communicate counsels with them and give them some share of the spoil till success make him need or fear them less, and then it would be easily taken out of their hands. Another proposes the hiring of the Germans and the securing of the Switzers by pensions. Another proposes the gaining the emperor by money, which is omnipotent with him. Another proposes a peace with the king of Aragon, and in order to cement it, they yield up the king of Navarre's pretensions. Another thinks the prince of Castile is to be wrought on by the hope of an alliance, and that some of his courtiers are to be gained to the French by faction by pensions." He says, there's a much more simpler solution to all that. Just be happy with your own country and rule it well. So I think that's a great. I mean, he said they're not going to listen to me because that's my solution to all of that.
Yeah, I think he's showing too the stupidity, you could say, of some rulers, that they're really more concerned about conquest, they're more concerned about making treaties, doing all kinds of intrigue, rather than properly ruling their own country. And that's what his point here is in talking about all these things. So he's, Raphael is saying, why bother? Why waste my time trying to speak logic and speak, frankness to these rulers and kings when they're going to do what they want to do, which is off to war and getting territories and occupying lands when they don't want to hear reason.
Right. But I think with, in some ways, I still think it's very timely.
Oh, yes.
Because, there is this attitude in this country, well, we're now in the modern age, and, well, people just don't want to take over your country anymore. And, we've been talking on the Trumpet Daily, Mr. Stephen Fleury has, about, the army in Britain is going to be drastically reduced. It's going to be below, like 82,000 soldiers. And it's like, do we really believe that people wouldn't want to come in and invade England? I mean, it human nature has not changed.
Right.
And that's one thing that kind of impresses me about this, even this example, is that, do you think China doesn't want to take over the world? Do you think Russia doesn't want to take over the world? They still want to do it. And they're not like coming in and, bringing whole armies in. What they're doing is they're attacking our infrastructure. They're tapping into our power grid. They're trying to upset our political process. And, so those things are still going on. So, Deborah, do you have any comment about that? Oh, you're having a little trouble with your throat. Sorry.
Sorry, excuse me.
Yeah, that happens.
I can just make another comment about... You brought this up about flawed thinking, because the whole premise of even these arguments, you can see there is a tragic flaw in the thinking, and that tragic flaw is the non-recognition of what human nature is.
Right.
That all of these things happen. These kings do these things. They wanted these things, and you try to speak reason to them. Well, they don't listen to reason because human nature doesn't respond to reason. It responds to selfishness and all these other negative, emotions. And so you really can't speak reason.
Right.
You really can't teach in a context of where there is human nature because its impetus is something totally different.
Right. Well, his third example, I think I'll just go on to this. The third example that Raphael gives of why, he doesn't want to serve a king. And he said that he talks about another imaginary court where the king is just set on accumulating money. And this is like page 19 in the Dover Thrift Edition. And he says, but what, said he, if I should sort with another kind of ministers whose chief contrivances and consultations were by what art the prince's treasures might be increased, where one proposes raising the value of a specie, and I'm not sure what that word means there, value of a specie when the king's debts are large, and lowering it when his revenues were to come in, and that so he might both pay much with it little, and in little receive a great deal. So I think that's just
manipulating currency.
That's right. He's talking about manipulating currency. Okay. And then he goes on to say, that money might be raised in order to carry it on, that a peace be concluded as soon as that was done, and with this such appearances of religion as it might work on the people and make them impute to the piety of their prince and to his tenderness for the lives of his subjects. he's talking about, declaring peace and that, it makes people, think he's a really great leader. So the third offers some old musty laws that must have been antiquated by long disuse, and which, as they had been forgotten by all the subjects, so that they had been also been broken by them, and proposes levying the penalties on these laws. And so, I just read something this morning about this. We purchase, it reminds me of this, we purchase something, and there's now a class action lawsuit against it, and... it said that I can opt out of it, but if I don't opt out of it and they lose, I'm going to have to help pay the legal fees. I'm thinking, what? I don't even care about this lawsuit anyway. So that sounds like that's what this the king is doing. And he says, He's talking about all these different kings. He says, a fourth proposes the prohibiting of many things under severe penalties, especially such as were the interests of the people, and then dispensing with these prohibitions upon great compositions to those who might find their advantage in breaking them. This would serve two ends, both of them acceptable to many, for as those would for those whose avarice led them to transgress would be severely fined, so that selling licenses dear would look at as if a prince were tender of his people, and would not easily or at low rates dispense with anything that he might against the public good. Another that's so funny. I mean, it's just like he's really taking advantage of the people. Another proposes that the judges must be made sure that they may declare always in favor of the prerogative, that they must be often sent for to the court, that the king may hear them argue these points in which he is concerned, since how unjust soever any of his pretensions may be, yet still some or one other of them, either out of contradiction to others or the pride of singularity or to make their court, would find out some pretense or other to give the king a fair color to carry the point for the judges, but in difference of opinion, the clearest thing in the world is to be made by the means disputable, and truth being once brought in question, the king may then take advantage to expound the law for his own profit. And so that's talking about the manipulation of laws, you know, to get his own advantage over them. And so some of that really goes on. If you look at some commentaries, I guess they in the original Latin, that example is a 926 word sentence.
Wow.
So yeah, that would put you to sleep. Mm-hmm. But then he goes on. He says, now here's the solution to something like that, and he calls it the law of the Makarians, and those are people that lie not far from utopia. So he's really building our you know, fascination with getting to utopia. And I just realized, guess what? We're out of time again. I think all of our listeners out there can finish reading book one and follow up on the examples. So next time, what we're going to do is we're going to discuss book two of Thomas More's much-studied work, Utopia. Now, if you have not started reading More's Utopia, there is still time. Remember, the Dover Thrift Edition is available at Amazon for about $3. And if you're not a Prime member, it's probably going to be about $5. So please write me any comments you may have to jbl@pcog.org. You can follow JBL on Twitter @JBLiterature1. You can also follow JBL on Facebook. Simply search for Just the Best Literature. Remember, you can leave me a comment at Facebook. So until next time, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.